If you're really confused about nutrition, especially as it pertains to climbing, I've got you covered. I've been working with climbers exclusively as a nutrition professional since 2013, and I've been seeing nutrition clients since 2007. I have a lot of years of figuring out what works for climbers, and I made a program called Nourish, where I go through my process that I take my clients through, and I give you way more education than I even do with them, because I give you 4 hours of video with me covering things like how to analyze your own diet log, how to time your meals and snacks properly, how to create a diet plan for yourself that doesn't involve major changes. Just small tweaks here and there can make a big difference. I go through things like healthy fat loss, if that's a goal of yours, optimizing a plant-based diet, talking about food quality considerations, and I go through digestive things such as bloating, gas, heartburn, and food sensitivities. I also talk a little bit about the keto diet and intermittent fasting for climbers. All of this can be found at trainingbeta.com/nourish, and this program will give you everything you need to improve your diet so that you can climb harder, have more energy through the day, and recover faster. trainingbeta.com/nourish. This is the Training Beta Podcast, and I'm your host, Neely Quinn. I haven't given you an update lately on my life. I've kind of been not wanting to, because there's been a lot of change happening, but I wanted to talk about it because I think it's really relevant to a lot of climbers' lives. I had talked a lot about this summer and fall wanting to send a project, a long-standing project of mine called Tomb Raider, which is a 13D in rifle. And I spent some time there in May and then in June. And then I was like, all right, I'm not strong enough to do this, so I'm going to train all of July and August and then go back in September, stay there for like a month, climb every other day on it, and just give it my all. I have climbed one 13C in the past, and this climb really grabbed my attention at some point because I can do all the moves. It's not super reachy, and it's really challenging for me because it's really power endurance-y. So I went back in September. I was stronger. The training that I did, I think, helped. I did a lot of power endurance work. I did a lot of strength training with like deadlifting and squatting and calf raises for knee barring and a lot of core, a lot of arm strength stuff, and a lot of opposition so that I could stay injury free. So I went back, I felt strong, I two hung, I came very close to one hanging. I was like one move away from one hanging. And so I was really proud of myself. And I also went through sort of a transformation during that time. I was alone, living alone in Rifle for the most part. My husband came to visit me, but I had a lot of time to think about things. And I work with a therapist regularly, have for years, and we ended up talking a lot about climbing at that time. I've also been working with Hazel Finley, and she was just on the show recently, and we talked a little bit about stuff that we have been talking about personally, but I just wanted to share some of the things that I learned. First of all, on a not emotional level, well, actually, it is an emotional level, I realized that having headphones in, and listening to music that makes me feel extremely powerful was really helpful. And I've never done that before. I've never climbed with headphones in. I've seen people do it and I thought it would be distracting. So I practiced doing it in the gym. And then I just curated a list of songs that made me feel a certain way, which was like really confident, really excited. And so I did that. And because I was on the same route every single day, I know that some people, they'll bounce back and forth between different projects. But for me, I was like, this route is going to take everything I've got, all of the days I have. So I would warm up on two things or three things, and then I would go try my project two times. And it's like kind of hard to do that. And so you have to find some way to get psyched, especially when it's something that's so at your limit or beyond it. So music was really helpful. I have also talked in the past about caffeine a lot, and I've not ever really been able to tolerate it because it makes me anxious. But I decided I wanted to try to use it this season, and I did. And I don't drink caffeine normally, but I would take some, I would use like green tea or black tea before my climbing days. And it worked really well to keep my energy high, and mostly it changed the way that I perceive effort. And I know everybody listening who drinks coffee on a regular basis is like, yeah, duh, I know that. That's why I drink it. Why do you think I drink it? But for me, this was like really life-changing. And so I really found that I could stay motivated and things didn't feel as hard. So I was really psyched about that. And I will continue to use it on performance days when I'm trying really hard and something feels important to me to send or to like perform well on a day. I'll definitely use it. And that's been really cool and really liberating because I was sort of afraid of caffeine for many years because of the way that it made me feel. But I just sort of accepted the way that I was feeling a little bit anxious and just, you know, took it as the good with the bad, right? Because it made me feel so good climbing. I also learned that too much caffeine definitely made me feel shaky. So I think that that's something that we can all learn from, like, you know, titrating how much caffeine we have on our climbing days. And again, I'm not using it at all on my rest days or most of my other climbing days. Then in terms of therapy and Hazel, I've always struggled a lot with feeling like climbing at a certain level or climbing just in general was very tied to my self-worth. Like if I didn't send something, I would get really down on myself and feel very ashamed. And like in the past, like long time ago, if I wasn't climbing because I was injured even, I would ask my friends if they still wanted to be friends with me. Because it's been so much a part of my identity for like 25 years that it was hard to imagine that I was anything more than that. It's not been that bad in recent years, but I still have that feeling that if I don't send or if I don't send a certain grade, that I am not a worthy human. And it's not like this is pervasive. It's just like this in the back of my mind kind of thing. And it affects my anxiety levels and my happiness when I'm out at the crag. And somehow I had a couple sessions where I realized truly that what I climb has absolutely no bearing on my self-worth as a human. First of all, because I was thinking like my mom has plenty of self-worth, like she's a worthy human and she's never climbed a rock in her life, or, you know, all kinds of other people. Every single person has self-worth. They have worth as a human just by virtue of being a human. And I hadn't really thought of it like that. In fact, my friend Lisey Hendricks said that and I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. So clearly I've struggled a lot with shame in my life, but so this really accepting this and like talking it through and figuring out that what I climb has no bearing on my self-worth made the process way more enjoyable, where I could just go out there, not care what happened, stay in my little bubble of, you know, like this is my experience. I'm doing this because I'm enjoying myself out here. I'm learning so much. I'm really pushing my abilities. I'm challenging myself. I'm feeling all of the emotions every day of like exhilaration and pride and disappointment and happiness and all of these things. And it's something that I think as climbers, we're really lucky to have, because I also realize that most people don't have a passion like this in their lives at all, and they don't ever even get to experience those, that spectrum of emotions and feelings that we get to experience challenging ourselves at this level, like really regularly. So that was one of, that was like kind of the big thing that happened, as I was released from the prison of of feeling like I needed to climb at a certain level, and I had picked this arbitrary 13D as my marker to be worthy, and I fully understand now that I don't have to do that. So I've been released, and from that I also realized that, like, I don't actually want to try anything that hard again unless I get much stronger, which is so liberating, because I kept seeing my friends like on all kinds of different things in the canyon, and hearing about other friends just climbing on stuff that they could do in a handful of tries. And I just really miss that. And so I'm going to focus on that for right now. And I'm also focusing on other things in my life. I feel like really freed up to do other things. And so I've actually enrolled in a coaching program at IPEC, which is the Institute of Professional Excellence in Coaching. So I start in a couple of weeks, and I will just add that to my offerings once I'm done with the program, where I will coach clients working on sports performance, like in climbing or in other sports, or relationship coaching. And I'll also integrate what I learn into my nutrition coaching. So I'm very excited about that. I actually always thought that I would be a therapist, or when I was really young, I thought I would be a psychiatrist. I've always loved working with people and talking with people. And so this is like a great opportunity for me to expand my skill set and help people reach goals and have clarity in their lives. So I'm really, really excited about that. Okay, so that's kind of what's been going on with me. And I tell you all of this just because I think that a lot of us can relate with each other, and it can be helpful learning about other people's breakthroughs emotionally, just because a lot of us are in the same boat, and a lot of us climb in order to chase grades, you know, and feel worthy. And so hopefully, I don't know, hopefully that's helpful to hear. So today's episode is all about a couple of things that I get asked a lot about in my nutrition client sessions. So we hear a lot about, not so much anymore, but it's still out there, is the ketogenic diet and also intermittent fasting. And you can do both of those at the same time, but a lot of people will ask me about them separately and if they should do them, and what are the pros and cons, and what is the ketogenic diet, and what is intermittent fasting. And so in my Nourish program, which is my self-paced program for about nutrition for climbers specifically, I have a little segment about just that. And so I'm just sharing this part of the Nourish program. If you want to check out Nourish, you can go to trainingbeta.com/nourish. But this little talk was in the context of a fat loss talk. And so you'll notice that I put pro in the pro section for each of these, is that they can help you lose weight. But I just want to do a little caveat here that I'm not saying that losing weight or losing fat is always a good thing. It's just in the context of people who have that goal, and it's a reasonable goal for them to have. And I know that fat loss and all of this can be very triggering. And I'm not condoning like unnecessary fat loss in the pursuit of climbing harder. So I'll leave it at that. But basically, I just wanted to describe what each of them is, what the pros and cons are, and specifically what the pros and cons are for rock climbers, because we're pretty specific in our needs for energy, like fuel. And so I'll talk about that, and I will talk to you on the other side. Enjoy.
So we're going to talk a little bit about keto and intermittent fasting, but these are just the diets, like I said, that people ask about the most. And the keto diet is, the goal is to use ketones as energy instead of glucose. So in other words, you're using fat for fuel instead of carbs. The fewer carbohydrates you eat, the more your body is forced to use dietary fat and your stored fat as fuel, and your body turns it into ketones. And so that's why it's called the ketogenic diet. In order to achieve this, your fat content of your diet needs to be really high. I don't know if you remember, but I was saying to keep it at 35 to 40% of your calories, and it would need to be 70 to 80%. And your carbs need to be extremely low in order to stimulate your body to make the ketones and actually use the fat. Otherwise, it's just going to use the carbs. So you would have to be at 5 to 15% carbs. Sometimes people can get away with a little bit more, but usually that's where people want to be. And then the protein needs to be moderate, between 10 to 15%. And what I had said was have it be between 20 and 30% for weight loss. And so this is a big difference, and that's because when you have too much protein, it can actually be turned into carbs, and then your body's using the protein as carbs, and it's not creating ketones. This can be extremely useful for weight loss, and this is a lot of times why people use it. When you eat carbs and you store them as glycogen, you store them with each gram of glucose with a certain amount of water. And so as soon as you're not getting all of those carbs, the water weight just falls off, right? So a lot of times people will slim down really quickly and it's just all of that water weight. And then your body starts also using its own fat reserves as energy. And so like I did this and I lost 6 pounds in 1 week doing this. It didn't work for me, but it does work for some people. So it's also useful, and there's been a lot of research done on people with Alzheimer's, some cancers, especially brain cancers, seizure disorders, and other health issues that the keto diet can really be helpful for. Sometimes Alzheimer's is called type 3 diabetes because they think that it has a lot to do with insulin sensitivity and blood sugar. So for climbers, some well-known climbers have had success with the keto diet. But when I've looked into it more specifically, like what they're actually eating and when they're eating, a lot of times they're eating higher fat, lower carb during the day, but then they're replenishing with potatoes or sweet potatoes or whatever at night. And so they're more like carb cycling, and they're not maybe in keto, like in ketosis. They're fat adapted, and you'll hear that term. It just means that their body is better at using fat for fuel than like a typical Western eater. But they're probably not strictly in keto. And the reason that they're, and that's not to say that some people aren't. Like some climbers I've talked to who can actually get away with eating 70% carb or 70 to 80% fat and super low carbs, and they climb just fine. And generally I see it work better with men and not so much with women. And that's because whatever, I don't even know why, but it's just harder for women to moderate their blood sugar with this kind of diet. And it's also really hard hormonally for some people. Your thyroid starts to get affected. But again, for some people it can work. But for climbers, the kind of exercise that we do often is anaerobic, like our explosive strength movements and, you know, like bouldering and doing hard moves on routes. Those are anaerobic. Those things are anaerobic. And so with that kind of exercise, we need to have carbs. Like that's how it's fueled. With the aerobic stuff, we can use more fat, right? So like long routes that are really easy for us. But otherwise, a lot of our exercise is anaerobic. So it's really hard to do our exercise without at least 40 to 60 grams of carbs per day. And that's like at a bare minimum. So if you are interested in doing this, you need to experiment to figure out the percentages that work for you and the carb cycling. Because a lot of times people can be in keto for most of the time, but then they'll carb cycle, like maybe they'll eat carbs for a few days before they go outside climbing, or like a couple days before they're trying to send something, or they'll eat carbs right before a training session and right after. But otherwise they're really low carb. And so you can do it, but in my experience, it's a little bit crazy making for a lot of people, where sometimes when you get into keto, you're fine, you feel great, but then you have like one bit of sugar and your body's like, oh my God, give me more of that. And then you eat more and more of it, and it's almost uncontrollable. And then it's difficult to get back into it, like into the mindset and everything to go off of all those carbs. So it can be a little bit crazy making for some people, but for some people it really can work. And the way to know if you're actually in keto is testing with keto sticks, or you can test your blood. So it'll, like, whether you're testing how many ketones are running around your bloodstream or how many are being excreted in your urine, you're going to get a sense of how far into keto you are. So the pros are that you're going to lose weight, or you can. Some say they have more consistent blood sugar and energy. People definitely are less hungry when they're eating this much fat. It just makes you not hungry. And then some people say that they feel great and much healthier. And those mashers are cauliflower. They're not potatoes. The cons are that it can be difficult to maintain, especially if you're like trying to eat out at restaurants. It's really hard to find things to eat. Some struggle with blood sugar. Muscle cramping can be an issue because you have to stay on top of your sodium levels, like eat more salt. Dizziness, for the same reason. Your energy levels can tank, and this can just be like if your body requires more carbs than others. And then you need carbs for the anaerobic output, like we were talking about. So if you decide to try it, I would read up on it more or get some professional help with starting it. Intermittent fasting is the next diet that I get asked about a lot, and it can definitely be helpful for weight loss. And I recommend it to people with certain caveats. So the concept is to give your body more time without eating to increase fat loss. And the reason for that is that human growth hormone I was talking about. When you don't eat for several hours or more, your body starts to secrete human growth hormone. And that's what helps us lose fat and maintain muscle or gain muscle. And so you can still eat the same amount of food for fat loss. It's not like you're fasting and you're just not eating anything. You're just only eating during an eating window. And like I said, this is going to increase human growth hormone, which increases lean tissue and fat loss. So the eating window and the fasting windows can vary a lot. You could do something where you're having a 6-hour eating window and an 18-hour fasting window. And this is extreme. Sometimes people will even do like a whole day of fasting per week or two. And that, I think, is extreme, and people start to rely a lot on caffeine to get through that. And I don't think that it's healthy. And a lot of times their energy will start to wane. I've even seen people who couldn't lose weight doing that. And it's because sometimes your body will go into that starvation mode. But some people can tolerate it fine. And maybe they would eat from like 11 to 5. You could also do an 8-hour eating window. And this is what I've done in the past, where I eat from 10 to 6 p.m. Or you could do a 10-hour window even. Like, it's much bigger. It's 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Or you could do 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. or whatever works for your schedule. So you're still getting 14 hours of fasting time. But at a certain point, it's just not going to be a fasting window anymore. Like, we're always all fasting every night. So we're all usually getting like around 8 hours of fasting. So it's just like more than that is what you're looking for. The pros a lot of people lose weight. There's a lot of research on this too, showing that it helps with weight loss. Some say that it makes their blood sugar more consistent and they have more energy and that they're overall healthier. The same sort of benefits that people say with keto. And then the cons are, again, this is difficult to maintain. And this is what I see with climbers, is it's hard because a lot of times we're working all day and then we're training at night. And then we want to eat something at night. But if you're intermittent fasting, you're not going to be able to eat at night. So you have to plan accordingly. So have your breakfast at work, have your lunch at work, have your dinner at work, or like on the way to the climbing gym. And then, and this is in normal times, not pandemic times. Like obviously this is much easier to do at home, right? But then you would come home and maybe have something small or just not have anything at all and go to bed hungry. But this can lead to blood sugar issues. If you're if you're going too long between meals, your energy levels can tank because of that. Sleep can get really difficult if you're hungry. And that can affect your stress hormones, and it can make you, if you go to sleep and your blood sugar drops really low, it can make you secrete adrenaline. And then in the morning, you're just not hungry and maybe even nauseous. And that's because you've just gone too long without eating. And then people, like I said, can depend too much on caffeine if they're having too big of a window. And a lot of times this, again, works better for men. And so for women, you want to have like a longer eating window and a shorter, not shorter than your eating window, but you want to, I would do like those 10 hours or 8 hours of eating.
All right. Hopefully that was a helpful overview of intermittent fasting and the ketogenic diet. If you have any questions about it, you're always welcome to email me at neely@trainingbeta.com, or you can work with me one-on-one. Even if you, like, if you're trying to do the ketogenic diet or incorporate intermittent fasting into your life, if we just talk for an hour, I can definitely help you do that in a healthy way. Like I said, sometimes when people abuse these things, it can start to affect your hormones, because when you don't eat for long periods of time, or when you don't get the right nutrients for your body, your body will start to secrete stress hormones. And when you have high adrenaline, high cortisol happening, that is all produced or secreted by your adrenal gland, and well, both of them. And then if your adrenal glands are working really hard, your pituitary controls your adrenal glands, and that means your pituitary starts working really hard to support your adrenals. And your pituitary also controls your thyroid. So I know that this is kind of confusing, but it's like a triangle effect. And so if you're stressed, if your adrenals are stressed out, your thyroid can then start to be affected, and your thyroid affects your metabolism and your energy levels and your sleep and your, and all these things. And long term, if you're abusing these things, you can start to feel really tired and be really dependent on caffeine, or you'll start to experience more depression, you'll start to experience more insomnia, things like that. And so I just don't want it to get to that point for people. And so if you want help incorporating these things into your life, just let me know. We can work together and I'll help you do it in a really healthy way. So I think that's about it for today. You can find us at trainingbeta.com and find all of my nutrition services at trainingbeta.com/nutrition. I really appreciate you listening all the way to the end, and I appreciate you listening to everything that I said in the beginning. All of that is really personal for me, and I hope that some of you can relate at least, and I'd love to hear from you if you do. So thanks again, and I will talk to you soon.